Chapter 6. Aspen. Once Calliope and her entourage were well away, and the stall owner was giving them buy something or get out looks, Aspen and Lyric forged ahead into the market. Aspen could tell the boy wanted to ask him more questions, but he simply shook his head and waved the lad on toward their destination. They skimmed the northern edge of the armor and weapons markets, and then traveled east into the artists' market. There, they found several stalls and shops devoted to music and musical instruments. Peering through a window at an elaborate lute of much higher quality than his current one, Lyric looked back at Aspen. "Are you certain I shouldn't just get a better instrument? I'm sure it would have buffs to increase my skills." Aspen sighed, passing his hand over his face. "Lyric, lad. You're terrible. Not the worst musician I've ever heard, but certainly the worst who wasn't drunk or tone-deaf. Though to be fair, we've not yet ascertained that you aren't tone-deaf. Rouge told me she did acrobatics in your world, and Mott claims he was in martial arts and fencing in college. It seems clear that in order for a traveler to be really good at something here in this world, you need either prior training or natural skill. You have neither, lad, and it shows. Let's find your new instrument, eh? You'll still have your old lute if you truly feel it's your calling." Lyric cast one last longing glance at the lovely carvings and silky wood of the instrument within the shop, and then his shoulders slumped. "That's true. I guess I can always ask my parents for guitar lessons or something." Aspen smiled encouragingly. "That sounds like an excellent plan." "Now," he looked around, "do you see anything that looks like what you remember?" The young bard's pale brows drew down and he looked around, assessing the instruments around them. "Not really, but we can ask." Thus began a long and frustrating few hours. None of the store owners recognized what Lyric described at all, except for one, and that one had a look of distaste at what he called a commoner's toy for the untalented. Lyric nearly gave up after that, but Aspen dragged him on to some of the freestanding stalls that held simpler instruments and less officious shopkeepers. When the sky was beginning to show the first hints of a colorful sunset, Lyric and Aspen settled to the ground behind their most recent failure. The vendor had been friendly, but hadn't recognized the name or description of what Lyric called a mouth harp. Lyric pulled his lute free from his back and began fiddling with the strings. He soon over-tightened one so that it sprang apart and stung his hand, leaving a red mark, though the boy didn't react other than to make a face and pull a new string from his inventory. Aspen reached over and gently tugged both instrument and string from the lad, and silently restrung the lute. Plucking softly at the strings, he leaned close, closing his eyes as he tuned it. Finally, he began strumming quietly, humming to himself. He didn't even realize what he was doing until he was already singing the chorus. "Rock her to sleep in a cradle of dreams. Sing her a lullaby of leaves. Tuck a cloud up under her chin. Lady, blow the moon out, please." He choked to a stop, feeling his eyes burn as he remembered a little brunette head resting on a soft white pillow. Dark lashes fanned against a pale freckled cheek, and a small hand curled nearby, limp and vulnerable in sleep. "Wow," Lyric said softly, "that was really good. Did you write that?" Aspen roughly knuckled moisture from his eyes and handed the instrument back to the boy. "No," he muttered. "My mother sang it to me. Then I sang it to my daughter." Instead of slinging the lute back over his shoulder, Lyric opened his hand, the instrument vanishing into his inventory. "She's a lucky kid. My mom read me stories, but she sings worse than I do." Aspen's chuckle was raspy but sincere. "I'm sorry." Lyric grinned, a self-deprecating but equally genuine expression. "Yeah." He stood awkwardly, his joints seeming to pull him up from his seat more than his muscles, and extended a hand down to the farmer. "I guess we'd better keep looking for that merchunga, huh?" Aspen grasped the proffered hand, coming easily to his feet with nothing more than a slight twinge in his back for his trouble. "I guess we should." It was in the last stall of the musician's area, before paints and brushes and canvases took over, that they finally found what they were looking for. A short, solid young woman, possibly in her mid-20s, was putting inventory into a well-worn basket, obviously preparing to close up for the day. She looked tired, but sighed and stopped what she was doing when her sharp eyes took in the traveler who had come to her stall. "Yes. I'm finishing up for the day, but if you know what you need, I may be able to help you." She had an engaging husky soprano, and Aspen suspected that her singing voice would be unusual and pleasant. Lyric grimaced and launched into the speech he'd long since memorized. I'm looking for a merchunga. It's a metal, he gestured toward his mouth, but the girl's face was already brightening. Oh. I hardly ever sell those in the city, but they're quite popular to the west and among the wood elves. I think I have one in here somewhere. She knelt and pulled another basket out from under a table. She dug through it, pushing aside what looked like various instruments in need of repair, and finally came up with a simple cotton bag that looked to contain something small and solid. There. I thought I had one left from the last time my clan traveled west. We take a few dozen when we go, because shepherds and farmers do like them. She held the bag out for Lyric to inspect. Wonderingly, the boy stretched out his hand, and the young woman laid the bag in his palm. He opened the pouch and peered inside, then reached in and fished out a simple lyre-shaped metal instrument, small enough to fit in the palm of his hand, and with a thin, flat tongue passing between the open ends of the lyre. He looked up, a grin splitting his face. Yes. This is it. It's a little different from the one my great uncle had, but, he shook his head, this is definitely it. Do you mind if I try it? The young woman shrugged and began repacking the basket. Go ahead. Carefully, Lyric placed the instrument firmly against his lips, opening his mouth slightly behind it. Then he plucked the tongue, and a musical buzzing filled the air. He plucked again, and a slightly different tone emerged. He continued this for a moment, and then carefully, plucked out a simple melody. Aspen could see that he was using his tongue and cheeks to change the shape of his mouth to produce the different notes. As he did, he was suddenly surrounded by a soft golden glimmer. The girl stood up, grinning. Congratulations on the level. I've heard better, but I've sure heard worse, too. Did yours break? Lyric lowered the instrument, grinning broadly. I haven't played in years, but yeah, this is it. I just got 2 levels in it, which already puts me halfway to where I am with my lute. Seems like the gods gave me credit for already knowing what I'm doing, a little. Nodding, the girl said, I've seen that with other travelers. Do what you're good at, and the gods bless you. Wrinkling her nose, she said wryly, wish it was that easy for us. Anyway, it's just 50 gold, so do you want it? Happily, the boy agreed, and money changed hands, leaving Lyric the proud owner of a new instrument, and the girl with a barely restrained expression of glee. Quickly, she ushered them out of the stall, closing the fabric walls around it, and hustling off into the gathering darkness with barely a word of farewell. Meanwhile, Lyric was happily strumming his new tiny harp, and the not unpleasant buzz drew the eyes of more than one passerby. Once the girl was gone, Aspen cocked his head, smiling slightly as he looked at the happy traveler. You do know she just fleeced you, right? No shepherd ever had 50 gold coins to pay for an instrument. I bet that little thing isn't worth more than 10 silver. Lyric dropped his hand to his side, looking shocked. No way. I thought that was a great deal. My lute cost almost 300 gold. Aspen felt his eyes go wide, and then tugged at his hat brim to hide them. I believe, lad, that you may have overpaid there as well. My people, he coughed slightly, may have realized that you travelers have far more gold than we do, and adjusted prices for you accordingly. The bard looked outraged, staring out past the circle of light cast by the glowstones that mage apprentices paid by the Merchants Guild were lighting all around them. Why didn't you say something? Aspen grinned. What did a simple farmer like myself know about that then, eh? Maybe why like to pay extra, out of the goodness o' your heart. Lyric glared, and Silas poked her head out of Aspen's collar, brought awake by the increase in conversation and darkness alike. Why is he mad? The little bat asked. As Lyric sputtered, Aspen chuckled. He bought himself a lesson he wasn't expecting. Oh, the little voice said knowingly, you finally told him that hat looks stupid, huh? She looked over at Lyric, who was now clutching the extremely large green hat with the extremely fluffy purple feathers that Aspen had been desperately trying to ignore for the last several hours. Sorry, but that feather's bigger than your head. Even Kor would know it's ugly, and he once asked for a new harness made with vermilion leather, eggplant laces, and copper metalwork. By the end of her comment, the hat had vanished into inventory with the discarded loot, and even Lyric was clearly torn between laughter and dismay. He sighed. I thought bards were supposed to be flamboyant. Aspen laughed and clapped the boy on the shoulder of his brilliant scarlet leather doublet. In my experience, only the bad ones, lad. Now, as long as we're on the subject, let's talk about those boots. The time for Rouge and Mott to return came and went, and there was no sign of them. Finally, Lyric admitted that he was out of time and would have to log off, or he'd be in trouble with his parents. Aspen nodded agreeably, looking up from the table at which the two were playing a rather desultory round of Maiden Fair. Lyric's luck was no better with the tiles than they had been at finding his instrument, and he currently owed Aspen 6,743 gold and his firstborn child, which he'd thrown into the pot a few hands before when he'd had a double prince. Unfortunately, Aspen had had an evil queen and a pair of swan maidens, and Aspen could only hope that the child was as imaginary as the gold they'd been betting, because he had no idea what he'd do with a baby. "Would you do me one favor, though, lad?" He cocked his head toward the dead tent they sat near, so that they could keep an unobtrusive eye out for the thief girl and her father. "Send them a message that I'll meet them at the inn by morning. I have a few quick, I hope, errands to run first." Lyric nodded, breezily unaware that his friend wouldn't be at all happy about her farmer being left unattended. "Sure thing." His eyes unfocused briefly, and then he raised his hand in a thumbs up. "Done. She'll get it when she logs on. I'll see you guys tomorrow, after I finish my chores." He rolled his eyes, and then his face went flat and stiff. The fresh zombie stood, oddly more graceful than when the boy had been controlling it, and walked away toward the dead tent. Left without a guard for the first time in what seemed like days, Aspen stood and stretched, leaning back to relieve the ache in his spine and rear from sitting on the hard chair for several hours. Silas poked her head out of his collar and looked around. "Should we really leave?" she asked worriedly, using the private mental communication that Aspen shared only with his animal friends. "Rouge won't like it if we go without her." He smiled wryly, murmuring so only she could hear. "So you'll gladly abandon me when Rouge asks, but won't leave her safely behind when I ask?" The bat huffed. "That's because she needs me, and you always get into trouble when you wander off." He leaned his jaw into the soft fluff of her body, humming reassuringly. "I need you too, little one. Plus, I know you'll help keep me safe." Silas paused, then spoke consideringly. "That's true. I'm very brave. It's not like you're alone." "Exactly." He reached up, stroking the small head soothingly. "It'll be fine. I'm just going to look." When Aspen moved into his house, it was the finest in its neighborhood, the last remnant of a long-past effort at gentrification. The surrounding buildings had mostly been broken apart into smaller or multi-family residences, with a few small shops run by single families or craftsmen who often lived above or in an attached building. Aspen, a new young father with a helpless child and aspirations to rise up in both the military and politics, if only to show his now ex-wife what she had missed out on, had seen the crumbling building as an opportunity. It had long been the property of an elderly lady, the widow of a merchant who had bought it just as nobility was moving out and the middle class moving in. The lady had recently died, leaving the home to a distant niece who had no interest in moving into such a chancy neighborhood, but who couldn't sell it easily, as the will required that it go to a single family who would live in it and restore it to its former glory. Understandably, few families who could afford the asking price were willing to move there, especially given the increased gang activity that had recently begun, as the neighborhood seemed to be a battleground between the territories of two encroaching groups of thugs. Some less scrupulous investors made offers, but backed out upon discovering they would have to swear a binding oath before the gods that they would live there themselves, and not break it apart into smaller lots. The niece had nearly given up hope when Aspen was told about the property by a realtor, more as an effort to get the frustrated young mage and his screaming offspring out of their office than any real belief that he could afford the place. He had, however, recently been paid out his first portion of prize money from defeating a powerful orc lord, the very same windfall that had inspired him to finally propose to his young girlfriend, and then been paid a sum again by his new wife's father when he came to retrieve her and found her already in possession of a newly spawned infant. It took some bargaining and nearly every coin he had, but the young Yorga's Penbrook, newly minted necromancer, walked away from negotiations with the niece as the new owner of a house with sprawling gardens, 3 stories, 2 towers, far too many bedrooms, and an entirely unnecessary ballroom of all things. He wore his child strapped to his back until he received his next payout, at which point he was able to hire a cook and a nursemaid. The cook was barely acceptable, but the nursemaid was the best he could find, a young woman with 10 even younger siblings, who was thrilled to be expected to watch only one small and generally well-behaved toddler. Within a week of his moving in, representatives of both gangs approached the house, explaining that the other group would kill him or torch the house if he didn't pay them to protect him and his property from their opposites. When he simply laughed at them and sent them away, a new group came, suggesting that he might find himself missing his daughter until a proper ransom was paid. These he sent back in pieces, carried in a bag by the reanimated corpse of a single member, which also informed the leaders of both gangs that if anything ever happened to his child, he would make them all into his undead minions and send them to slaughter their own families. After this, the neighborhood became one of the most peaceful in the city, and Iorgaz's reputation was set in stone. Iorgaz Penbrook, Master Necromancer, King's Necromancer, Itai's left hand, Scourge of the Dark Races, lived quietly in this house with his daughter Lark for all but a brief few weeks of Lark's life. Over the years, as he was quietly shunned by human society, he poured money into providing Lark with everything she could ever want. He repaired the house sometimes through magical means and sometimes through more mundane. He hired gardeners to create a wonderland of roses and vining flowers climbing over trellises, interspersed with graceful fountains and cobblestone paths. He upgraded his cook and found a few doughty maids who were willing to be overpaid to work for a broadly reviled death mage. The one thing that stayed the same was Mavis, the nursemaid he'd first hired to care for Lark, until she fell sick when the girl was only 10. By then, the child's predilection for gathering stray and injured animals was well established, and she was making simple tinctures and salves from recipes she found in her father's eclectic library. Iorgaz hired the best physicians in the city to care for the woman, and Lark plied her with concoctions carefully crafted to her own exacting standards. Unfortunately, it was all for naught. Mavis grew sicker and sicker, and the physicians declared her beyond help. So seeing Lark's bitter sorrow, Iorgaz broke his own pride and went to the temple. Necromancers, chosen of Itai, Gina's sister as they might be, were also one of the primary weapons used by Lich Lord Akuji against humanity. As such, they were loathed and feared by nearly everyone, and the current High Priestess of Gina and Bright, an ancient woman with the unlikely name of Buttercup, refused to help a necromancer or any member of his household. No amount of money, deception, or humiliating begging would change the Haridan's ruling, and at last, Mavis died in her sleep. Lark was heartbroken, but for the first time, showed that she had all of her father's stubborn determination, and then some. From the moment the ashes of the only mother she'd ever known circled into the sky on a vagrant breeze, she began to study. She learned physicking, apothecary, midwifing, and herbalism. She had the rose garden torn out and replaced with an herb garden containing every plant known to be of use in medicine. When she found that some wouldn't grow in Bright's climate, she had a greenhouse built and spent more time in it than she did in the house. At the age of 14, after Buttercup's little mourned passing, when a new, more open-minded High Priestess was selected by Gina, Lark quietly dedicated her life to Gina's order. Once she was a full priestess, with new skills and spells to go with her new class, she began to serve the poor and abandoned. When Iorgaz protested, finally refusing to support his child in what he saw as a dangerous folly, Lark sold her fine clothes and the useless jewelry that had long gathered dust in her closet. She bought a small building and spent all the time there that she could. She healed anyone who came to her. People with minor injuries or illnesses received free medicine or bandages. More serious ones were treated with small amounts of magic, bolstered by more medicine and bandages. Prayers and holy healing succored those who were beyond all other help, and though sometimes even her magic wasn't enough to help, she always, always tried. When her father saw that she wouldn't be dissuaded, he changed tacks entirely. He bought a new, larger building, though Lark insisted it must still be in the poor boroughs, among those who could not otherwise afford to travel to reach her. He staffed it with physicians, supplied it with medicine, and hired security to protect it, though he soon realized that the so-called Saintess of Bright had little to fear among her people. Then quietly Iorgaz returned to war, leaving his daughter behind, as he so often had been forced to do. She fought her own war, within and without the church of her deity. As the front lines drew ever nearer to the city, the times when he could return home grew fewer and shorter, and when he did return, he found that Lark was as caught up in her battles as he was in his. Nevertheless, they each returned to their haven, their home, to remember happier days and soak in the peace they could find only within its embrace. Finally, inevitably, war came to Bright itself. By this time, Lark, a young divine, was newly named as the next High Priestess, though no one expected her to fulfill that role for a decade or more, since the current lady was only in late middle age herself. But the city was overrun on one hot summer night, a flood of undead having crawled beneath the deep river and high walls. The High Priestess was one of many others who died, and by the time the invaders were destroyed, in large part by Yorgas himself, earning him the title of Hero of the Battle of Bright, Lark was High Priestess in all but name. A short few weeks later, Yorgas would offer himself up to the enemy, in exchange for a promise to spare his daughter. Not his city, not his king. Only one thing, in the end, mattered enough to him, to bring him to grovel before his greatest enemy. And the Lich King laughed and threw him into a cell. For a week, the evil lord himself came to slowly tear away his captive's skills, spells, levels, and stats, reducing Yorgas to a pile of bones and skin that barely qualified as human. Lark came to save him, as she did for all the lost. She brought Kor, Sumi, Mia, Silas' mother, and Rook, a raven, as they refused to be left behind. Rook and Mia died to allow the others to reach Yorgas in his cell. There Akuji found them, and the skeletal lich laughed as he told them that he had allowed them to get this far. He stripped Kor and Sumi of several levels, leaving them unconscious and terribly weakened. Then he tried to swallow Lark and choked. As High Priestess, Lark was filled with the divine power of life. Filled and overflowing, and the lich could no more swallow her down than a starving man could eat hemlock and survive. He could, however, destroy her physical body, and this he set out to do. How surprised he had been then to discover that Yorgas had insisted that his healer daughter learn to defend herself, and that she had taken to that instruction like a duck to water. Lark was badly injured, and had to know that death was inescapable, but she disarmed her enemy, injuring him in turn badly enough that the evil mage simply commanded his minions to destroy her. Which they set out to do, but she, stubborn and unbroken to the end, chose her death. Using her holy power, she exchanged her own soul for enough power to heal her father, at least enough to get him to his feet. He picked up Akuji's fallen sword, and ran the Lich Lord through, even as his daughter died, dissolving into glittering ash, taken up by her goddess, and leaving not even a body for her father to mourn over. After that, Yorgas was never allowed to return to his house. After being declared Duke of the North while lying on what everyone thought was his deathbed, he recovered enough, thanks to Sumi's ceaseless care, that unknown enemies began to think he might need a bit of help to reach his well-earned final rest. After barely surviving a few murder attempts, he fled in the night. He left a note stating that he was going north to die in peace, and left the contents of his bank account to Lark's hospital, to fund it for as long as it might exist. When he left his house behind as well. He'd long since closed up all but his and Lark's bedrooms. The second and third floors were abandoned. Only two servants stayed to the end, a cook and a groundskeeper. The building and lands had been protected by spells that no one but the bravest or most foolish might try, and though those fell when his class was stripped from him, it was possible that fear and reputation might have been enough to protect his home from depredation. Which brought him to this moment. Returned at last, physically stronger than he had been as a high-ranking necromancer, though he had no good way to measure his magical powers similarly, he stared at the rusted and overgrown gate of the estate. The walls were still sturdy and tall. It had only been a year and a half since he had nearly died after all, but plant life was happily reclaiming what his gardeners had worked so hard to clear away. Aspen drew in a deep breath, finally forcing himself to let go of all the memories that threatened to drown him, and took a step toward the gate.